This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
The nail in the coffin!
All right, welcome to The Nail in the Coffin. Justin Rowan, one half of the outstanding Cavs podcast, The Chase Down. I had to look this up to make sure I had it right, but the last time that we had you on here, we had just watched Kyrie Irving score 42 points to put the defending champion Cavaliers up 3-1 on the Celtics in the 2017 Eastern Conference Finals. Things have changed a bit since then.
Buddy, you just blew my mind. One, thank you for having me back. Apparently, it's been a whole lot longer than I realized. But yeah, holy smokes. I can't get over it that it's actually been that long.
I had to look it up because I did not believe it myself. 3.5 years since we've brought you on. It only feels like it's been 3.5 years since we've seen the Cavs play. In reality, it's been about 8 months. And I got to tell you, you know, one of the luxuries that we have with this show is that we're pretty broad in terms of what we talk about on here. You know, any of the Cleveland teams or, you know, even earlier this week, we got into spending 25 minutes talking about Alex Trebek. You know, you guys with the Chase Down, you know, other than finding out that the Cavs wouldn't be participating in the bubble and learning their position in the draft, I think we've had literally nothing in terms of Cavs news over these past 8 months. You know, hosting a Cavs-centric show, I got to hand it to you and Carter. I have no idea how you guys have kept your ship afloat all this time. It's amazing.
You know, thank you. First of all, I appreciate it. And, you know, part of covering a rebuilding team, I think Carter and I have found ways to come up with kind of interesting angles and things to talk about when there's just the on-court product isn't great. Obviously, we had no on-court product, but we try to cover the rest of the NBA as well, going through kind of those Cavs-colored glasses. And one of the things that we found really helpful, especially in the bubble, was looking at the team-building methods that all these different teams had that were successful, especially the Final Eight, and looking at what lessons the Cavs could have. So it takes a little bit of creativity, but I got to tell you, I am very, very excited to actually have Cavs content to talk about in the very near future.
Yeah, so we're finally going to get some movement this week. I believe the moratorium on trades is going to be lifted on what, Monday? Is that right?
So the date hasn't it hasn't been decided yet. I think Monday is probably your betting favorite for that, but it could be as soon as tomorrow. So I don't know when this podcast is posting, but wouldn't it be crazy if we, after months and months of nothing changing and no Cavs news, you might post this podcast and Andre Drummond or Kevin Love or someone else is on another team. Well, this conversation sounds silly.
We're recording on Saturday afternoon for those of you scoring at home. We'll get into some potential deals here shortly. But so we got this moratorium on trades being lifted. We know the draft is on Wednesday. Free agency probably not too far after that. So let me ask you this. If you're Kobe Altman, the Cavs GM, you've had an eternity to break down the roster that you've got right now. Mm-hmm. As you're entering this week, what are your priorities? You know, you got the fifth pick in the draft, but in terms of what you've got and who you could be acquiring, how are you proceeding right now?
I think at this point, the way you have to think, the Cavs do have limited flexibility, but what you want to do is be bringing in guys that are going to help accentuate the players that are already on this roster. When you're looking at Garland, Sexton, Kevin Porter Jr., I think right now that's your core. And although we've had a year and a half basically to look at this draft class and to try to build these guys up. Ultimately, I don't think whoever they bring in is going to be as important as those three, especially this year. I think this is going to be the year where you're really spending a lot of time figuring out exactly what you have in those guys. So whether it be moving veterans or whoever they use their exception on, I think all of those moves are going to be geared towards trying to maximize those guys, because going into the next offseason, the Cavs are likely going to have cap space. It's a very loaded draft class. I think they want to have the best idea possible of what's already on this roster, because by next offseason, I think that's when an identity has to be decided upon when it comes to this team.
So let's talk about some of these guys that are on the roster right now, or we expect to be on the roster, possibly not for very long. You already mentioned a couple names linked to some trade talks. Do you expect Andre Drummond to get dealt, or Kevin Love? I know that feels like his name has been in trade rumors as long as he's been here. We're going on year 7 of Kevin Love, which I never in a million years would have thought he'd last here that long. I've even seen Larry Nance's name pop up a couple of times, depending on, you know, maybe what happens with the draft. Do we expect that Cavs might have some deals already kind of lined up and are just waiting to, you know, push the button here and say go?
Yeah, I think it's possible that they might have some deals lined up. I don't know if it would be centered around the pick or those veterans. I think the most likely outcome for Andre Drummond is that he's traded at the trade deadline, because then there's going to be a little less on that contract. It's an expiring deal going into a great free agency class. So the value he can provide both as a rental and as an expiring that helps clear up a max spot going into the 2021 free agency class, I think that is going to be an attractive asset. When it comes to Kevin Love, there's starting to be some kind of rumblings about it. I still don't anticipate it. I think he's going to be a tough contract to move, but it does seem like there's a little more buzz, a little more momentum, especially when you look around the NBA landscape. His contract has been talked about so much, but now there's ones that are worse and getting moved. Like, you look at Russell Westbrook's contract. Yes, he's still an all-NBA talent, but in 3 years, he's going to be paid $47 million, and his body's been breaking down. Look at Al Horford's contract, and he's a name that's moving around. So I think when you have these other massive contracts on the market, all of a sudden, you look at Kevin Love and you say, hey, this guy is still incredibly efficient. Maybe if you're a team like one of the teams that has been linked to him in rumors is the Warriors, ironically. If you're looking at him, like what he'd be able to provide in that offense, spacing the floor, dribble handoffs, all of that kind of stuff, I think he becomes a little bit more attractive. So I still don't anticipate him being moved this a season, but it would be less surprising to me than a trade last season would have been.
The one rumor I saw with Kevin Love, a friend of mine texted me last night, said something that to the effect of a deal with the Warriors that would involve Kevin Love and Draymond Green and
going to a third team.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Cause like the way my friend texted me, he's like, the Cavs trading for Draymond Green, like, why would they do that? I'm like, I think you got some bad info there. There's no way that would happen. So if we are talking about a rumored deal that would get Kevin Love to Golden State, it would probably have to be a three-teamer then.
I would imagine so. The one hilarious outcome would be if Love and Wiggins got traded for each other again.
Perfect.
Like imagine it, like one scenario that would be just way too funny is if that trade went down and both teams switch picks so that the Cavs could go up and draft Wiseman, who they really like, and the Warriors kind of like some of those other guys. That would really be something, because then you're getting a young small forward in Wiggins, which, yes, he's wildly overpaid, but it's not like he's not productive. So you're answering your small forward and getting a center for the future. So I don't know if I'd hate that, especially if Kevin Love does want out. I think that has to factor into the decision-making, because ultimately, like, you want to do right by him. I understand that sports is a business, but especially when you're talking about these guys that were part of the championship team, it hasn't always been easy for Love, but I think despite some missteps and times where he's got frustrated, he's been really good to the city, and to see the team do well by him would be really nice to see.
Speaking of guys who are part of the championship team in 2016, who you want to do right by, have we seen Tristan Thompson in a Cavs uniform for the last time?
That's so hard to say. I know there's mutual interest there. It depends who they draft, right? Like, if they do end up taking a center, I don't foresee them taking Okongwu, but like, let's say they do. All of a sudden, you got Andre Drummond, Okongwu, Dean Wade, Jordan Bell. It just feels less likely. And when you see rumors of Toronto losing Serge Ibaka to the Lakers and things like that, if they have a gap, it wouldn't surprise me to see Tristan go home to Toronto, play for the Raptors. Like, he would mesh perfectly well. I do think that he has good years left in him. He's 29 years old. You probably, if you sign him to a 3-year deal, you're probably capturing him for the rest of his prime. I would say maybe it's 50-50. It wouldn't surprise me to see Tristan come back. I know they'd love to have him back, both for on and off court reasons. But it does get tricky when you're looking at the market and kind of what they're able to accomplish. If they do move Draymond, I would say it's much, much more likely that Tristan would be back.
Mm. I'm going to have to brush up on the NBA rumor mill. That's the first time I've heard Serge Ibaka and the Lakers linked together. That's interesting.
There's so much. It's overwhelming. And like, I've been so busy during my work days lately that I'm finding like I'll turn on Twitter for the first time and just all of a sudden Victor Oladipo is begging teams to trade for him every single time out. I didn't know that.
Oh my God.
It's a lot to keep up with.
The Victor Oladipo thing was hilarious to me this week, with him apparently like telling other teams, I want to come play with you guys or whatever. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, apparently they all just told him no thanks, because he comes out with this statement, no, I'm totally in with the Pacers, which, by the way, Paul George also said once upon a time, and we know how that worked out. But did Oladipo just like completely overestimate his own worth? I feel like so much of his reputation in the NBA and so much of his stock is built on that series he had against the Cavs a couple years ago and LeBron's last year here, where they went to 7 games. I mean, he was awesome in that series. Don't get me wrong, but I don't know. I feel like hasn't really measured up to that since then.
Yeah, it's really been about a 5-month stretch, right? That he was at this top tier level here,
right?
Because the following season he started off very slow for about 15 games or so, and then he got hurt. Like, he was already dropping off before the injuries, and now you look at it's been, we're almost 2.5 years removed from him playing at that level, and I think teams would be willing to gamble. But when he doesn't have any kind of long-term money on his contract, do you want to pay him just based on speculation? I think the answer around the NBA has been no.
Yeah. Indiana's not even a bad team without him, didn't they? I mean, they were what?
Yeah, that's the other thing. They haven't really missed a beat without him, which would concern me just a little bit.
Yeah, that's interesting. Back to the Cavs, though. We got the draft coming up on Wednesday. You've dropped a few names here so far. We'll go into some of them in a little bit more depth here shortly, but the one name I feel like in every story I've been reading for the last month, if not longer, has been Obi Toppin of Dayton. And it's strange to me for a couple reasons. Number one, you look at his skill set and the things he's good at and the things he's not good at, particularly his potential defensive liabilities. And if you think about the way the Cavs backcourt struggled last year you need somebody behind them to, you know, kind of fortify the paint, so to speak. I don't know that he's the guy. And then you also think about who the Cavs have on their roster right now. What am I missing here? Why is there all this smoke around Obi Toppin to the Cavs?
So I think part of it is the realization that Kevin Love isn't a long-term part of this team. Kobe Altman's philosophy seems to be draft best player available. And when you're looking at this draft, like, we've talked ourselves into guys like Isaac Okoro and other wing players that would potentially kind of address that need. But this isn't a team that's going to be out of the lottery next year. They're still going to be in the lottery. There's about 8 or 9 players that would go first overall in this draft and next year's draft, and almost all of them are small forwards. I don't think any of the wings in this draft are better prospects than Kevin Porter Jr. I think if you're drafting an Isaac Okoro, he's not going to play year one. He'll play year one, but he's probably not going to start year one. And going into year two, you're probably drafting another very good wing, Kevin Porter Jr. I don't think you're going to beat him out. You probably aren't even going to beat out Colin Sexton. So I think looking at Obi, they see a very complete offensive player. He's probably the best offensive talent in this draft. The defensive concerns really freak me out, though. That's the thing that it seems to go against what they've been saying publicly of what they want the identity of this team to be. Although I don't see it, but there are very smart draft people, Kevin O'Connor, Jonathan Wasserman, Sam Vecenie, Giovanni, this as well, where they think some of the defensive concerns are overblown and he could be a fine to slightly above average defender. If that's true, and you're pairing that with his offensive game, okay, he makes a whole lot more sense. But when you're talking about drafting Obi Toppin, I think it automatically necessitates a lot of roster moves, whether it be dumping Kevin Love for expiring contracts. Maybe you're playing Larry Nance at the three a little bit more. Maybe you're not bringing back Tristan Thompson because there's just not enough space in the big man rotation. He just raises a lot of team building concerns, even though I think the offensive talent is pretty undeniable.
Larry Nance, I felt like in limited appearances, was weirdly effective at the three last year. You know, I mean, the Cavs were running some odd lineups there in those last few games before the pandemic shut everything down. And they were in that supersized lineup with him and I think Drummond and either Tristan or Kevin Love along the front line. And I felt like, you know, it wasn't a huge sample size, but it kind of worked.
Yeah,
not something you want to build your team around, but
like it's funny because Larry was drafted as a small forward and moved his way all the way down to center. I don't think he wants to play center. He's a four, like that. That's what he should be playing.
Yeah,
but I think if you're looking at next year, assuming the players are okay with this, I don't think it'd be unrealistic if your backup unit is Kevin Porter Jr., Dylan Windler, Larry Nance, Obi Toppin, and like Tristan Thompson. Like I think that could work. That's viable. That's a very big lineup. There's enough spacing there. So I think you can get creative with it. My preference would just be to keep Larry at the four and maybe you move other guys around, but we'll see what they do. But this isn't a team that is afraid of experimenting. So I think we're going to see a lot of that next year.
Yeah. Nothing to lose right now, especially. Why has Larry Nance's name come up in trade talks? Not a ton, mind you, but at least a little bit. Is it just like he could be an odd man out depending on which way they go in the draft and who else they've got coming back? Because like it doesn't seem like Andre Drummond's long for this team. Tristan Thompson, you know, might not be getting re-signed. Kevin mm-hmm. Love could be getting dealt. Kind of feels like Larry Nance needs to be here.
Yeah, no kidding. I think why you see his name come up is Cavs are not a good team, or they were not a good team last year. His contract, which I mean, even I criticized at the time, is looking like a very good deal at this point, and it goes down each year. And like you look at a lot of metrics, there's a case that he was the most impactful player on the team, especially that period after they stopped playing him at center. Like once he was playing power forward again, everything kind of came together for him. So I think a lot of teams are saying, hey, this is a team that is still retooling. Let's try to get this good veteran player. And it's funny to call Larry a veteran, but I mean, that's what he is at this point. So I think it's natural for a lot of teams to inquire. I don't think the Cavs are shopping him, but at this point in where they are with team building, it'd be irresponsible not to listen to calls for guys, especially when it does look like you're probably taking a front court player in this draft.
Yeah. It'd be tough to see Larry Nance go. His gets us rating off the charts, among other skills that he brings to the Cleveland roster. Back to Obi Toppin, the one other question I wanted to ask you. So with all this, you know, smoke around him potentially getting drafted by the Cavs, for the most part, they run a pretty tight ship, I think. You don't get a whole lot leaking in terms of which way the Cavs want to go. Like, I never heard anything about them being interested in Andre Drummond last year, and all of a sudden on the trade deadline, ta-da. and that was just one move of many. I feel like, you know, you haven't really heard a lot about, so it just strikes me, I mean, for God's sakes, we can't even get a leak on what their City Edition uniforms are going to look like this year. So the fact that there's like so much out there right now about them being interested in Obi Toppin just really strikes me as weird. And I'm wondering, do you buy it? And if not, if they're trying to run a smokescreen here, to what end? Like where are they trying to go instead?
So I think that's a really smart observation. I think you're on the money there, where this team doesn't really telegraph a whole lot. So why is this being telegraphed? I think the interest in Obi is real. I think that the team would consider drafting him. I almost kind of feel at this point that he's the most likely candidate to be picked by the Cavs. But at the same time, I think they are entertaining offers, especially in that 8, 9, 10 range where it's Knicks, Wizards, and Suns. Those are all teams that have interest in Obi Toppin. And I think that they are trying to look at all options, whether it be trading up, trading down, trading out. I think they are amenable to all of those ideas. And I think their top priority is probably trading down. Because, I mean, if you trade down to 8, you're still probably looking at maybe Okoro. Devin Vassell is going to be there. Patrick Williams is going to be there. Shit, Obi Toppin might be there still. Okongwu might be there. So there's still a lot of very good options. So I think in this draft, they are trying to telegraph a little bit more because they're hoping somebody behind them is going to step up to the plate with a good offer. And if they don't, yeah, go ahead, take Obi. But if you force a team to draft Obi ahead of you because of what you're doing, then maybe Denny Avdija falls to you, who they're very high on. Maybe you're not really upset about it because, I mean, I want Okongwu to be the pick. That would be my top guy. Even if this was the first overall pick, I would be taking Okongwu. But when you're talking about his realistic ceiling, you're looking at like a slightly improved Tristan Thompson. So even if you don't pick the ideal candidate, I don't think the opportunity cost is insanely high. So I think you can play these kind of games to get teams to be active on the trade market a little bit more in this draft because, hey, ultimately, you don't really have a lot to lose.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So some combination of LaMelo Ball, Anthony Edwards, James Wiseman. It seems like those guys are mostly linked with those top three picks. I've heard some different names mentioned for 4. And then, you know, the Cavs would be on the clock at 5. Give me a scenario where you could see somebody dropping that might become available to the Cavs at 5 that would motivate one of those teams in that 8, 9, 10 range to want to move up and make a deal with the Cavs.
So I think obviously Ball is the most obvious one. We've heard him go anywhere from 1 through 7. The other interesting thing is Ball worked out for the Detroit Pistons. And he's not working out for the Cavs. He hasn't worked out for a lot of teams. So I think there is a very realistic chance that Detroit is moving up in this draft. I do think if Denny fell to the Cavs, like let's say it does go chalk with the first three, Ball, Edwards, and Wiseman. I think Chicago is being linked pretty heavily right now to Tyrese Haliburton. And if Denny falls to the Cavs, one, I think he's probably higher than Obi Orokoro when it comes to the Cavs draft board. I think they'd be pretty inclined to just take him. But that's a guy that has really been coveted throughout the draft process. So it wouldn't surprise me to see teams trade up. Even Obi being there, the Knicks really, really like him, apparently. Mm. And it wouldn't surprise me if the Cavs look into getting someone like Frank Ntilikina to kind of round out that guard rotation, maybe some future assets in there as well. Kobe's usually good at finding that extra little value on the margins, whether it be second round picks or other things that increase their flexibility. So I do think, even though this isn't a strong draft, there's a lot of guys you can kind of talk yourselves into for a role player. So I do think there's going to be viable trade down options on the board for Cleveland. It's just whether or not they believe it is worth it for the talent drop off.
Well, when you've got 8 months to kill, you've got enough time to talk yourself into anyone, I guess.
No kidding. I think there's been a lot of that. I think people need to have very realistic expectations going into this draft, because even under normal circumstances, I think this class is going to take a year or so to really find their footing in the NBA. It was the same thing with 2019, which was a stronger draft. And when you look at it, they're being drafted, and 2 weeks later, it's training camp.
Right.
A week after that, it's the preseason. And none of this is going to be normal circumstances. So I think a lot of these guys are going to be very green. It's going to take some time, and patience is going to be the name of the game. I don't think you're going to figure out who the busts are in year one. I think it's going to be a process.
All right. So Onyeka Okongwu, I'm sorry. That's the guy you said that if the Cavs were picking first overall, that's who you'd want. Give me the case for him.
So I think with Okongwu, you're looking at maybe a more polished offensive version of Tristan Thompson, a guy that really understands what his strengths are and sticks to it, which is really an underrated trait when it comes to centers. Guys, if it's not a Jokic or Embiid type, I think you want a center that sticks to what he does well. You don't want this guy taking step back 18 footers or anything like that. Attack the rim, find the passing lanes off ball. He's a good passer. I think he's a better passer than he even gets credit for. He was just over 2 a game in USC, which college assists are a lot more stingy. And USC, I mean, that's a poorly coached team. We saw it with Kevin Porter Jr. I think once he gets proper coaching, he's going to flourish even more. Defensively, I think you're looking someone in kind of that Tristan or Bam mold. I don't think he can guard 1 through 5 like Tristan was able to in his prime, but I think he can guard all 5 or all front court spots, and maybe for a possession or two can switch on to a guard. He's very, very mobile, and I just think that he kind of encapsulates everything that you want from a modern 5 in today's NBA.
All right, so you said coaching. That makes me want to ask here, how do you feel about JB Bickerstaff and the Cavs coaching staff? Because I think with these shifted lottery odds, you know, the Cavs have really kind of gotten the business end of it the last 2 years here, where they've had one of the worst records in the league and fallen to 5th both times. And, you know, it's harder than ever right now if you're a bad team to rely on getting a top pick. So I feel like now more than, you know, really any time that I've been paying attention to the NBA, player development and being able to get guys, you know, not at the top of the draft, but getting guys lower and developing them, it matters. And I know it's a players league, obviously, and that's always going to be true. But, you know, you look at what some of these other teams do. I mean, like, look at Miami, for example. I mean, they made the finals this year, and, you know, the majority of their roster and their key pieces were guys that were not picked at the top of the draft. So,
yeah,
you know, it's a long way of asking, you know, do the Cavs have the infrastructure in place that they can start doing those kinds of things?
Yeah, so I think there is multiple parts to this question. I think JB Bickerstaff, I think there's reasons to feel optimistic about what he can be as a coach. This was a guy that was very highly thought of. He's had a couple interim postings. This is going to be the first time that he really has some form of job stability, or at least the closest you can have in the NBA. I don't think job stability ever actually exists.
We wouldn't know anything about that in Cleveland here as Cavs fans, though.
No, of course not. But from a player development standpoint, I feel very good about this. Like, I have outsiders, people that work for The Athletic and scouts and stuff like that, that really credit guys like Mike Garrity, his work as a shooting whiz and turning around the jump shots of Kevin Porter Jr.'s as cleaner, Colin Sexton added a shot, Larry Nance has improved his shot since he's been there. I think that they've done a very good job. Lindsey Gottlieb deserves a ton of credit. Like, I know everybody wanted KPJ to play more at the start of the year, but look at his progression throughout the season. He got more minutes as he earned it. Mm-hmm. He was ironing out those habits, and eventually it came to a point where they said, okay, we can trade Jordan Clarkson because we feel KPJ and Sexton are ready to take on a bigger load, and both of them thrived in that situation. This year now, he's essentially going to be in that OKC Harden role where he gets to initiate more coming off the bench. I know we think that there's only five players on a team and it's the starters. He's still going to get starters minutes, but he's going to learn. He's going to get more reps. And I think the Cavs are doing a very good job right now of creating accountability and creating an environment where these young guys, yes, the team doesn't have a lot of top-end talent, but there's a lot of young guys competing for minutes, and they're going to have to do the right things. We saw down the stretch, JB benched Sexton, Garland, Love, Drummond, KPJ. All of these guys got benched in certain games and weren't able to close because they weren't performing the right way in that game. And I think that kind of accountability is really important for player development because, as you said, look at Miami, look at Denver, look at Utah, look at Toronto. All of these teams have built from the middle. Like, we always say, if you're not first, you're last. It's Ricky Bobby's wrong about the NBA. Like, none of these teams won with high draft picks that were from their own team. It's all player development. The talent coming into this league is better than ever. And even if you don't develop your guys into stars, if you develop them into guys that can contribute, that are starters, that have the right habits, you can consolidate that talent and go get a star like Toronto did. So I think that's the right way to go. I think that's always been the right way to go. But the new lottery odds have really kind of solidified that you should try to win every single game. Maybe not bring in a win downtown. Maybe don't go trade for Russell Westbrook. You're still investing in the young guys, but get those young guys to develop the right habits and see how far they can take you.
All right. You mentioned Russell Westbrook. I know he's one of these guys that's getting linked to a lot of trade rumors. Apparently the word is he wants out of Houston.
Yeah.
You don't think the Cavs would make any sort of a move for him. We have an owner, you might know, likes to do things kind of out of the box and swing for the fences and make splashy moves every now and then. Doesn't feel like the kind of move that would fit into a long-term picture. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't foresee that. I think if the Cavs wanted to have Russ, they could. But that being said, I think the asking price is probably a little bit higher than what they're looking for. I think they want to bring in a veteran and try to do better, but, you already have Love, Drummond. If you could theoretically consolidate your young talent and go get Russell Westbrook, you might maybe a 7 seed or whatever, but that's an insanely expensive payroll, not a lot of long-term upside. And I don't think it meshes with what they're going to do. So I do think Russ is ultimately going to end up in New York or Charlotte. Those seem like the favorites. My God, with him being on the Hornets be depressing, but who knows? Maybe if he's on Charlotte and they're trying to do some short-term play, we can send Kevin Love there for Bridges and reunite the UCLA guys.
I was going to say, one way or another, might see that UCLA 06 connection ride again. Exactly. Here. All right, so a couple of these other names that we've discussed here in the draft. Isaac Okoro and Devin Vassell, a couple of guys on the wing. Would either of that, would you be shocked if the Cavs were to draft either of them and make the case for why they'd be a fit here or not?
I think Vassell would be a little surprising. It seems like they're bored with who they're anticipating being there is Denny, Obi, Okoro, and Okongwu. A lot of O's there. But Okoro would not surprise me. This is a guy that has a relationship with Colin Sexton. He has a very high work ethic. He's going to be someone that's going to be able to contribute on the defensive end right away. I think there are valid concerns with his offensive upside. He showed flashes of it in college, but at the same time, we don't know if those flashes will even translate to the NBA, never mind being able to turn that into a reliable skill. So I do think that he's a smart off-ball player. He's a very, very good defensive player. He's someone that's going to work hard. He fits the culture, but he's kind of like the flip side of Obi, where, yes, I have a lot of confidence in this guy on the defensive end of the floor, but especially in today's NBA, if he's Lou Dort offensively, which let's not rule that out, or something along that, you can't pass up open shots in the NBA. And he passed up a fair amount at Auburn, and this line's even further. So I do think that there are valid concerns, but I think from a culture standpoint, especially when you project these guys to kind of be long-term rotation players and guys coming in off the bench, I think that he would very likely be a successful choice for the Cavs.
Any other storylines heading into the draft or potential player movement around the league that you're eager to see? I have a feeling that whenever this trade moratorium gets lifted, especially, you know, I'm assuming it's going to be before the draft, we're going to see quite a bit of activity to make up for lost time here.
Yeah. I mean, Chris Paul to Phoenix seems like it's gaining a lot of momentum. One thing I'm really keeping my eye on is Jrue Holiday to Atlanta. Atlanta is likely going to trade out of their position. Or make some sort of trade with their pick. They're moving one way or another. And obviously that's of interest from a Cavs perspective, because you look at the Eastern Conference, it's good this year. Like, it should be very good. Obviously we have no certainties when it comes to coronavirus, but there are seven locks for the playoffs. And then you got Chicago, you got Washington with John Wall back. You've got maybe Atlanta with Jrue Holiday in the mix, or Orlando's still going to be there. Like, there's a lot of good teams. And even if the Cavs are trying to win, you're probably still ending up in the top seven for lottery odds next year, which is where you want to be. It still gives you a pretty good chance. You have like a 1 1/3 chance to land in the top four, where you're getting possibly a franchise cornerstone type guy. And those guys go deep next year. So I think looking to see how the rest of the teams in the East make their adjustments, make their moves to kind of figure out where the Cavs are going to be. Cavs could be young, fun, and good, like relatively good, I should say. They can be young and fun and still not have the greatest record just because of how good the Eastern Conference is.
You know what? I'll take it.
I think that's the best outcome. Like, if they are like, I think the comparison is year three with Kyrie. I think that's what the Cavs are going to be, where they finish the season basically going 500. You had optimism for the future. I think that's where we're going to see the Cavs lose some close games, be competitive, which really, I know it's championship or bust for so many people, but if you're dedicated and you're invested in this team, what you want to see is them competing on a night-to-night basis, because I want 72 events that I can watch throughout a very cold winter and see the growth. Like, that's what gets fans invested in teams, and that's what I think we're going to see from the Cavs this year, a team that's on the upswing and maybe changing some of that national perception around them.
Yeah, that'd be nice. We're probably going to be locked down here for a while, so if we have a watchable basketball team, that would be very helpful. And I'm just going to need YouTube TV and Sinclair to figure their shit out so I can get Fox Sports Ohio back, but that's a conversation for another day. Justin, thank you so much. Always great to catch up with you. I love listening to you and Carter on the Chase Down. Folks, if you guys are looking for more Cavs talk, you should be subscribed to them, or if you're already subscribed, Justin, what do you always tell people to do?
You know what? Do the same thing with this podcast that you should do with our podcast, which is leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those damn books. Honestly, those ratings really make a big difference. They help us show up on search topics and all that stuff, and it's really important. So if you're already subscribing, unsubscribe, and resubscribe to help take advantage of Apple's flawed metrics.
I love it. I love it. Cook those books. Always the best. Yeah, we are on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher. You can stream us on waitingfornextyear.com as well. Justin Rowan, thank you so much.
No problem, man. Thank you so much. And hey, let's not make it so long before you invite me back. I'm always down to come on, man.
That's a deal. All right, that's going to do it for us for this week. Our thanks again to Justin Rowan. I'm Tom Valentino. It's been The Nail in the Coffin. We'll catch you again soon.
Hey there, and welcome to the Joy of Paddle podcast, hosted by me, Minter Dial, a veteran of the paddle tennis world, and sponsored by Paddle 1969. Whether you're a paddle tennis aficionado, just beginning, or have never even heard of paddle, or padel, as it's called in North America, this is an exhilarating new show that delves into the captivating stories of notable paddle personalities worldwide. In its inaugural season, you'll be treated to exclusive anecdotes, valuable tips, life lessons, and humorous moments shared by esteemed professional paddle players, industry insiders, and passionate paddle enthusiasts. With each season aligning with a pro tour, you can anticipate 2 engaging episodes per month. The Joy of Paddle podcast is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, where you can find other great shows in a number of categories, such as sports, health and wellness, true crime, and fiction. To find out more about Evergreen Podcasts, go to www.evergreenpodcast.com. Vamos!